Baptist 21 is a pastor-led voice for Southern Baptists in the 21st century. The B21 podcast will discuss current issues in the SBC with Southern Baptist church leaders. To check out more resources, visit us at baptist21.com.
Introduce the panelists, and again, if you have questions you want to ask, send them my way. We're going to try to keep this relatively short and efficient, but talk through some of the important topics. So next to me is my dad, Danny Aiken, president of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Hero to me, big Georgia Bulldog fan, which is a good time to be, and also a Dallas Cowboy fan, which is a good thing to be right now, too. So next to him, David Sons, pastor at Lake Murray Baptist Church in Central South Carolina. You've been serving in that role how long now?
Been on staff there for about 7 years, lead pastor for 6 months.
So, what a time to serve the convention as well. Yeah, it's great. Next to him, Nathan Rose, pastor at Liberty Baptist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Nathan has done some podcasts for us at Baptist 21 and is new, fairly new to the network. You guys joined, I think, beginning of the year, and thankful to have a presence there next to Midwestern Seminary, and thankful for your church. And then you've already heard from Juan Sanchez, author, father, pastor, head of TGC, trustee at Bethlehem College. What do you not do, Juan? You do all kinds of things, don't you?
I only go where I'm asked to go. Where I'm invited, I go.
Well, we're glad you're here. So I just want to jump in, and maybe, Dad, I'll let you kind of start. Could you just give a recap of what's kind of happened in the last say 4 months? So from June to now, and then I'm going to have David talk just briefly about what happened yesterday.
Well, the big thing coming out of Nashville, well, there are several things. One, Ed Litton was elected as president, kind of a surprise because he was not a super well-known pastor from South Alabama, dear friend to me for 3 decades and a member of our board of trustees. He'll be here next week in chapel. Then, of course, the appointment of the Sexual Abuse Task Force, which was passed overwhelmingly by the convention when it met in Nashville. Since then, and I'm going to let David speak to that with greater detail and knowledge, a lot transpired over the 100 days that led us up till yesterday when, I say praise God, the trustees voted to honor the will of the messengers and to give the task force the authority and the freedom to do what they need to do to conduct a thorough investigation of the executive committee with respect to how sexual abuse has been handled there for basically the last 20 years. Southern Baptists are notorious for not making a straight line from one point to another, but by God's grace, we usually get to the right place eventually. I know that can be frustrating for some of you, but just remember, we're just a band of brothers and sisters who are sinners, and sinners will do sinful things, but by God's good grace, as we walk with Him, He'll guide us and lead us to get to the right place, which again, with all of our phobias, is one of the reasons why I'm still glad, proud, and even honored to be a part of the Southern Baptist Convention, and as a president of a seminary, to serve all of you brothers and sisters.
David, talk about kind of what happened yesterday. I mean, we were in session being served wonderfully, but tell us what happened.
So yesterday was the really third meeting of the executive committee since really the third meeting in 3 weeks. And so when we arrived in Nashville 2 weeks ago for the regularly scheduled executive committee meeting, the agenda for that meeting was specifically to deal with the motion that had been made by Grant Gaines and Ronnie Parrott and approved overwhelmingly by the messengers in Nashville to fund and agree to a full, transparent, independent investigation of the executive committee by a third-party investigator, specifically, as Dr. Aiken said, towards the idea of allegations of mistreatment of sexual abuse survivors and potentially of the mishandling of allegations of sexual abuse. And really, what we were given, many of you saw the motion. Many of you may have been in Nashville and voted for the motion. What we felt, at least myself personally as a trustee, felt was a pretty straightforward motion, that the messengers had spoken overwhelmingly for this motion, and that we as the executive committee were to abide by what they saw to be best standard of practices offered to us by the investigator, including the waiver of attorney-client privilege. And so I've learned a lot in the last month about attorney-client privilege. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a pastor by trade and by calling. But we have really been over the last several months trying to play catch up. I'm a brand new trustee. This was my first trustee meeting in September.
Welcome.
I think Jared Wellman said that it was not baptism by fire, it was baptism by nuclear bomb, and that was what it felt like. We had to do a lot of catch up, and so really the sticking point came down to this idea of the waiver of attorney-client privilege, and to kind of give a brief summation of that, it really is certain documents are considered privileged, and especially if there is interaction that you are having with an attorney, you are receiving legal advice, you're asking legal questions, those things can be considered and not relevant to a case. However, in the particular case, there seemed to be credible evidence that perhaps some of the mishandling had happened around the idea of legal advice that we had received, or the executive committee leadership had received. Wow. And so, what the messenger said very clearly in Nashville was that a waiver specific to the motion, this has been purported as a blanket waiver. It's not a blanket waiver. It was a waiver of attorney-client privilege specific to the motion surrounding the allegations or accusations of mishandling of sexual abuse, that those things would be able to be seen, that the investigators would be able to see those documents, and that was the only way that we were going to be able to have a transparent, full, everything brought to light investigation into these allegations. And so that was primarily what was put before us. This was the sticking point. And when we went into Nashville, we knew kind of this would be, how will we do this? In my mind as a trustee going into Nashville, the question was not, will we do this? Because I'm a Southern Baptist. I'm a lifelong Southern Baptist, Southern Baptist by conviction, not by convenience. And so I understood kind of what was at stake, what we had been told. And so in my estimation, it was not, will we do this, but how do we do this? Much has been said about fiduciary responsibility, probably ad nauseum. But we, I felt, had a responsibility to the messengers to say, how will we do this? At that meeting, many of you watched it. You saw it did not go well at the first meeting. And coming out of that meeting, the executive committee passed a motion to say, we'll give 7 days for the officers to negotiate with the task force, the sexual abuse task force that President Litton had put forward, which is chaired by Bruce Frank, a good brother, and vice chaired by Marshall Blaylock, who is another good brother from my home state. And so we said 7 days for the officers, EC officers, Chairman Roland Slade and other officers to negotiate with the task force. After those 7 days, we came back 2 weeks ago, met again via Zoom, and it did not go well. Nothing happened. And so we voted again to give another 7 days for the officers to try to find a way forward. And yesterday in the meeting, while many of you were in session, we met again and heard a report from our officers that there was again no agreement to be had. And so there was a motion put forward yesterday by Jared Wellman to agree to the contract that Guidepost, the agreed upon investigator, had put forward in October to the task force, which included the waiver of attorney-client privilege for the EC to waive privilege, to sign that contract with Guidepost. And we voted yesterday afternoon to do exactly that. So as Dr. Aiken said, it was a long way around to do what eventually was, I believe, to be the right thing.
Let me ask two follow-up questions specifically. So there's been a lot of misinformation on both sides. There's obviously people who hold to their sides strongly. You said this a second ago, but I want to ask it specifically. This was not a just blanket waiver of attorney. That would be an inaccurate statement. Because there are
Correct.
Some who are leaving that meeting and have written a letter to all their state convention churches saying such. That would be an inaccurate statement based upon the meeting you were just in.
Yes, from what I understand and from the way that we interpreted it from the beginning, and I think even to what Jared's motion spoke to, is that this is not a blanket waiver of attorney-client privilege. This is a waiver of attorney-client privilege within the scope of the original motion, which deals specifically with mistreatment, mishandling of sexual abuse, allegations of sexual abuse, and survivors of sexual abuse. And so what we kind of saw was that we are, you know, this is not kind of a get rid of everything. We even tried to say it was said in the original motion and with the motion that was voted on yesterday, that this is waiving attorney-client privilege within the scope of the motion. Now, there are some who disagree, who would say, you know, legal precedent one way or the other. But what we saw yesterday and the information that we received was to say that this is a, you know, aimed towards the scope of the motion.
And there's a time limit, too. It's not like going Correct. Back to 1845.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yes, and the scope of the motion was from January of 2000 through June 14th of 2021. And so they only have, they're looking at those 20 years. And it was said by the messengers that they have to present something within a month of Anaheim, the annual meeting in Anaheim coming up in 2022. And so really you're looking at your 20 years in 8 months. I mean, at this point in 8 months.
Yeah.
And so the scope of the motion is pretty narrow to those things and those time periods. And there's a time limit on how long the investigators have to start looking.
And it's narrowed specifically to the executive committee.
Correct.
So when some people say, well, now they're going to come and invade your church. No, it is specifically and very clearly for the executive committee and only the executive committee.
Nathan, I want to ask you a question. As a pastor, as you've been kind of watching from afar these 100 days or so, why have you kind of kept up with what's going on? And kind of what has been your level of concern, frustration, and what have you been thinking about for your own church as it relates to this issue?
It's unfortunate that I've had to take so much time away from pastoring, from preparation for sermons to focus on this. What's frustrating is that you have individuals who, yeah, have been elected by our convention to do what the messengers want, seemingly trying to find a way to get around that. And so we have an obligation, a responsibility to be gracious, to be kind, to not assume motives, to not assume the worst, to not be suspicious of people. But at the same time, we also have an obligation to intervene, to speak out when we need to appropriately apply pressure to ensure that the executive committee does what its messengers want it to do. And even beyond that, if you just think about what we're asking the executive committee to do, we're asking them to waive privilege so that a thorough, transparent investigation into allegations of sexual abuse, that's what we're asking. That's behind the vote. And so it's a little bit frustrating and concerning that it seems like there's a lot of opposition to what should be like a very simple decision, which is why you had the overwhelming majority of 15,000 messengers vote for this initiative to take place and for the executive committee to waive attorney-client privilege.
David, you go ahead.
I was going to add one thing in this discussion. As someone who has the honor of serving one of our entities, my great concern in all of this was the brokenness, the breaking of trust. One of my friends said that Southern Baptists are able to do what they do because of trust, but trust is like a rope of sand, easily dissolved. And I'm not in my, I've been here now 18 years, was at Southern for 8 years, here for 4 years, so I guess close to 30 years. I think we were on the verge of shattering trust more so than at any time since perhaps the conservative resurgence in 1979, which was launched then because there was a lack of trust about what was going on in our seminaries theologically. This didn't have anything to do with theology, but this did have to do with honoring the will of the messengers and honoring the will of the churches. And I think we were on the verge. Had the decision yesterday gone the other way, I really believe we would have seen a deluge of churches that would have altered the way they give. And a lot of my friends, and I understand this because my sentiments there, well, we're just going to start designating all of our money to the International Mission Board and to the North American Mission Board. And I just want to say, wait, there are six seminaries that most of you were trained at that are faithful to the gospel and committed to the Word of God. We could have been collateral damage in all of that. And so I'm praying that this will now cause people to say, well, we can put the brakes on that. And I do believe this. I think we're going to see some really positive movement, not just with the EC. I'll take my own school. We meet next week, our board of trustees, and my chairman, Tim Dell, is here. He's on the board of Pillar. We realize that we need to do an even better job of making sure our trustees understand the full workings of this institution, and that they recognize the great, great responsibility that they have to make sure that Southeastern stays true to what Southern Baptists want this school to be. And so I think there'll be a motivation on behalf of the other entities to learn from this and hopefully do the right thing as well.
Juan, as a pastor, what has been your read on everything that's going on? How much have you kept up with it, and what level of frustration? And even maybe a better question is, they ended up doing the right thing, it seems, but it took 100 days. So trust, I mean, I don't, it's not fully gone to the degree Dad mentioned, but it's gone. Like, there's trust is broken. So how does that, how do we recover from what's happened?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I have a friend that said, you know, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. Mm. And I think we need to realize that, things are not as bad as they appear to be on social media, and they're not as good as a report at the Southern Baptist Convention, right? Yeah. So we just need to be wise. We need to be wise, and we need to understand we're all trying to cooperate together to the same end. Mm. And so what I would say, as discouraging as this has been, what I would say is actually our polity worked in the end. Mm. And our polity is messy because it is congregational, but it did work. And again, that just speaks to the fact of what you guys have been saying about this 21. It's the people in the room that make the difference. And so it just speaks to the fact that we need to be engaged and involved in the room and vote. And it does take time, but in the end, hopefully there's enough like-mindedness that our polity is frustrating and slow, but at the end result came, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just our polity. You know, there are different ways of doing that, but that's our polity, and you just have to live with it, be patient, but also you have to learn it as well.
That's right.
You have to learn how it works in order to be engaged. And then what I would say is, you know, I think Nathan mentioned this, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to others. We don't want to impugn motives. We want to think the best of other people. We want to bend over backwards to think the best of people. But let us be the ones that are engaged in having conversations. It does no good to have conversations in social media, to slap labels on people, to dismiss them. And I think, like Dr. Akin said, these are not doctrinal differences.
Right.
I mean, they're differences in doing some things. And we all have a voice, but just because we have a say does not mean we're going to get our way. And I think sometimes when people don't get their way, then they go to means like social media and those kinds of things. And we just need to learn how to act like Christians and have conversations, to sit down and understand, you know, some of the issues that people are raising are serious issues. You know, let's talk about them. We're not going to all agree on everything, but the Southern Baptist Convention is a broad spectrum of cooperating churches, which I think is why we're in Pillar, right? Because we want to cooperate with people that are like-minded, but we don't make up the Southern Baptist Convention. We're just a small segment, but we have to learn how to cooperate together for the advance of the gospel.
Good. David, you said that, you know, when you came on, your at least kind of feeling of express purpose was do what the will of the messengers was. Let's just figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Do you get the feeling, And again, you can only share what you can share, that was not in privileged session and executive session. But is that the feeling you got as far as the whole body of the EC and even the staff? It seems from afar looking in that there's kind of mixed signals because there's lawyers brought in on different sides. You're being counseled different ways. Is that the feeling you got as far as the whole body and even the staff? Or was there as much confusion as there seems to be from the outside looking in?
It's a great question. And there was indeed a lot of confusion. I want to build on what Juan said just a moment ago. One of the things that we kind of kept hearing is, hey, we all want the same thing. We all want the same thing. And I think that I want to, again, like Nathan said, I want to not impugn motives. I want to believe the best of these brothers and sisters in Christ. We all want the same thing. But there was a significant disagreement about how we get there and about who we become in the process of getting there. And I think for me, what I kind of expected going into the meeting, again, this is first meeting, this is brand new for me. What I kind of expected going into the meeting 3 weeks ago was, okay, here is option one. The messengers have spoken, they've given this motion. If you do this, you know, and here's the XYZ, here's ramifications, here's possible things that could happen, here's this, okay, that's option one. Option two, there is something that's called partial waiver, right? Organizations, businesses, companies use this all the time, right? You actually can waive attorney-client privilege on the back end of an investigation, okay? So there is something where they could have said, this is option two, now you could try this, you could print this, not what the messengers asked for, but it does kind of get down the line, you could try this, and here's the ramifications and consequences, okay? And then option three, you could not waive at all, and here are the consequences, ramifications for that. That was kind of what I expected going in, give us these options. But we were not presented with those options. From the time we got into the meeting, it was, here's why you can't waive privilege. Here's why companies don't waive privilege. Here's what's going to happen to you if you do waive privilege. And so from early on, at least what I interpreted, and many trustees like myself interpreted, was the focus, the question was never, how can we do this? It was always why we can't, and then eventually became why we won't do this. And I think as I sat there and looked at all of those things and considered that what we were being told from legal counsel, from leadership, from other trustees, I just really started to think about a lot of the things we've already talked about, right? About our polity, that I believe that our system works, that as the executive committee, we're not a top-down organization. The headquarters of the Southern Baptist Convention is the local church. We are a bottom-up organization. No one told us about the liability until much later. Thankfully, the task force, the sexual abuse task force, sent a letter to many of the trustees speaking about specifically what the opposite liability would be. That we actually open ourselves up to liability if we don't do the will of the messengers. That was never presented to us early on in any of these sessions. What could happen, what the liability is if we don't follow the will of the messengers. So again, I think for us, that was part of the confusion. For some of us who were a little bit taken aback by that in that moment to go, we feel like we should be doing this for the sake of our polity, for the sake of trust. Dr. Aiken, I think you hit it on the head. There has been an erosion of trust specifically towards the executive committee over the last several years. We saw that in Nashville, yeah. Right? There was a repudiation by the messengers of anything that the executive committee was bringing forth in Nashville, which speaks to that erosion of trust. And this was a moment for the executive committee to reestablish trust with the messengers and say, we do indeed hear you, and we're going to do what it is that you have tasked us to do. And then third, I just want to speak to this, and then I'll move on, but there were survivors of sexual abuse sitting in the room with us. And these women are our sisters in Christ. And they have been wronged. And there's credible evidence that they have been wronged and mistreated. And for us to applaud them in being there and to say, we're sorry this happened to you, but then in the next breath say, but we're not willing to do the hard work or open ourselves up to any risk to bring about reconciliation or to rectify a wrong or to right a wrong that has been done to you is disingenuous, and it is anti-gospel. And so we, as I'm sitting in this room listening to us debate back and forth about insurance, and all of these things are indeed important, but But we are not going to fulfill the Great Commission if we sacrifice the Great Commandment. We're not going to do it, and God's not going to honor it. So I was reading, I was reading the book of Esther over the last several weeks. The Lord brought me, and I just want to read this. Just this is the verse, and I know you guys think that I'm going to for such a time as this, but I promise I'm not going there. I am going to the verse before. Listen to what Mordecai says to Esther, and this is what the Lord impressed upon my heart, and I think many of the trustees. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish." And I sat there and I listened to the stories of those women, and I met them, and I listened to their stories. When I heard their stories, I thought, God is going to deliver these women, and we have the opportunity to be a part of that deliverance, or we have an opportunity to try to protect the base and protect our assets and to not open ourselves up to any risk, and us and our father's house will perish. What we have worked so hard to build over the last 150 years in Southern Baptist history will perish if we get this wrong in this moment. And so, you know, brothers and sisters, I just want you to know that was the heart going into making this. What we, again, it was a complex decision. There are lots of moving pieces, but as Nathan said, it was really simple. It was really simple. Are we going to be the kind of people who we have always said that we will be, or are we going to perish?
Yeah, I want you to build on that, and just kind of one more question in this arena. But what are the concerns moving forward, and the outstanding questions, and you know anything that hasn't been addressed? I want everybody to answer that question. But what just kind of your read on kind of where we're at, questions that still need to be answered, and where we go from here?
Well, I think the key thing will be when the report does come out next May. Will we do the right thing in response to that report? Will we acknowledge where we made mistakes? We made mistakes. Will we be willing to apologize where we need to apologize? Will we be willing to take the necessary steps to try to keep things like this from happening in the future, knowing we can't keep it all, but we can certainly put in place things that would lessen the likelihood that something like this would ever happen again? I believe if we do the right thing in those three areas, one, I think God will honor it. Two, it will restore confidence, a greater degree of confidence among our people. And it will also, I think, bear a wonderful witness to this watching world that's very skeptical and even cynical about who we are. And I think it will add greater weight again to the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ when they see us actually living it out.
David, I want you to answer the same question, but also, is there any potential possibility that they would just still say, we're not going to do that? And how will that be? How is the waiving of attorney-client privilege going to be enforced?
So I do want to just say this. My friend Dean and Sarah said this a couple weeks ago, and I think this is a good way to look at this. Yesterday was not a win. It was a step, right? What's amazing about this, I think Nathan mentioned this a moment ago, what's amazing about all this is that all of this for the last several weeks and last 115 some odd days since Nashville has been about to start an investigation. Like, we don't even know. Like, the investigation just now is just getting started. And so I too am hopeful that this step in the right direction does, I think, bring that the truth comes to light. And then in that moment, we are able to say, let's lay it all out before us and then deal with what we need to deal with. And so, you know, certainly I think that, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but if there's anything that has happened over the last 2 weeks, I've been reminded of this, is I'm hopeful for Southern Baptists because of the response that I've seen from Southern Baptists these last few days. All six seminary presidents, many of our state conventions, pastors, messengers, they have reached out. And listen, this wasn't just a few trustees and Twitter, right? This was a grassroots movement of Southern Baptists saying, we knew what we were doing in Nashville. We knew what we were asking for. We want you to do, you have the power now to do the right thing in this. And so as I've read those letters and I've seen the names of those pastors, many of whom I know and know to be men of integrity, I am hopeful that this can be the dawn of a new day and the turning of a page in the Southern Baptist Convention. But I still think that there is a reckoning coming. And there's something that we're going to have to deal with. And so yesterday was not, you know, the time for us to celebrate and sing kumbaya. Yesterday was a step towards what could become very difficult, right? But I'm hopeful that in the coming days we'll do the right thing.
Thanks for serving, brother. We appreciate your work. Nathan?
I don't have much to add other than I'm not looking forward to what will be discovered. Hopefully nothing. That would be encouraging. That would be great news, and we would say praise God for that. And however, I'm not hoping this happens, but assuming that they will find something, that's going to be a very painful process. There's going to be some repentance. There's going to be some lament. There's going to be just things that we're going to have to grieve and mourn over. However, I am encouraged by that because I think that the net result, the end result, will be justice, will be protection for women and children, and ultimately that I think Southern Baptist churches will do a better job of both preventing and responding to sexual abuse. So I think the end result will be beneficial, though I'm not looking forward to going through that process.
Juan?
Yeah, I agree. It's how we respond, you know, to the investigation that will be important. But I want to add, I think we should see this as a macrocosm of our local churches, and it should cause us to make sure we have our crosses teed and, you know, I's dotted. We need to make sure that we're being vigilant, that our volunteers are being trained, that our buildings are safe places for our families to gather and our children's to have ministry, because I just know we all have the same inclination. We can cast stones at the EC, but we all have the same inclinations. If this happens in our church, the first instinct is to protect, to circle the wagons. So I think we should use this as a learning time to say, you know what, God forbid this should happen in our church. We're going to do everything we can, but let us respond rightly if this ever happens to us.
So many more things I would want to ask, but we don't have time. So I'm going to ask one more question, Dad. I want you to answer. So in Pillar, we are in the States, SBC only. You have to be SBC to be Pillar. Things like what's happened over the last 100 days, this and other issues in the SBC have caused plenty, you know, many, some of our guys to question why that, why keep putting up with this. So I don't want to be like unaware that that's a real question. And there's a reason why that's a real question. At the same time, we still feel like there's benefit, not just a benefit that we get, but we've had tons of benefit in our training and our planting of churches, oftentimes money given from grandmas who do not like Reformed theology, and yet we got trained in seminaries and learned Reformed theology. So there's much to be grateful for here. What would you say to us, not as a non-Pillar pastor, why there's still benefit to being a part of the SBC in the midst of a mess like this?
Well, your youngest brother, Tim, brought a layman who's now on his staff to his first Southern Baptist Convention in Nashville, which you can imagine that was a eye-opening experience from beginning to end. And working backwards, he did say, I've never been at a meeting where the leadership, i.e. the executive committee, experienced such a repudiation by the messengers. But he also said anyone that was at the sending commissioning service on Monday could not help but be thrilled to be a part of what we're doing in planting churches across North America and getting the gospel to the ends of the earth. Then when you reflect upon, you've got six seminaries that are rock solid in their theological commitments and convictions, I'm happy to be a part of that. And then he said something I think very wise. If you were to leave here, where would you go? Where would you go? And anywhere you go, you're going to go to a place where they've got their own problems and their own issues. But when you look at in spite of our sinfulness, what we're doing in North America, what we're doing around the world, and the fact that we're training almost 1/4 of all theological students in America, and they're being trained in Bible-believing, gospel-focused seminaries. That's enough for me. I get discouraged, but then I go on the mission field. I come to a meeting like this. I get my inoculation and my booster shot, and I can go back out again for another year. So just make sure you're engaging things like that, and it'll help you sled through the difficult days.
Speaking of inoculation, I want to spend the next 10 minutes getting your opinion on vaccination and masks. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Well, can you guys thank the panelists for being a part? Thank you for listening to the Baptist 21 podcast. To learn more about us, visit us at our website, baptist21.com. Also, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast with others. It would really help us out. If you ever have thoughts or ideas for future interviews, please reach out to us at our email, baptist21@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening to the podcast.